seemed to distill a hazy feeling of sleep on the world. Okonkwo and the boys worked in complete silence, which was only broken when a new palm frond was lifted onto the wall, or when a busy hen moved dry leaves about in her ceaseless search for food. And then, quite suddenly, a shadow fell on the world, and the sun seemed hidden behind a thick cloud. Okonkwo looked up from his work and wondered if it was going to rain at such an unlikely time of the year. But almost immediately, a shout of joy broke out in all directions, and Umuofia, which had dozed in the noonday haze, broke into life and activity. "Locusts are descending," was joyfully chanted everywhere, and men, women, and children left their work or their play and ran into the open to see the unfamiliar sight. Page 56. The locusts had not come for many, many years, and only the old people had seen them before. At first, a fairly small swarm came. They were the harbingers sent to survey the land, and then appeared on the horizon a slowly moving mass, like a boundless sheet of black cloud drifting towards Umuofia. Soon it covered half the sky, and the solid mass was now broken by tiny eyes of light like shining star dust. It was a tremendous sight, full of power and beauty. Everyone was now about, talking excitedly and praying that the locusts should camp in Umuofia for the night. For although locusts had not visited Umuofia for many years, everybody knew by instinct that they were very good to eat. And at last the locusts did descend. They settled on every tree and on every blade of grass. They settled on the roofs and covered the bare ground. Mighty tree branches broke away under them, and the whole country became the brown earth color of the vast, hungry swarm. Many people went out with baskets trying to catch them, but the elders counseled patience till nightfall. And they were right. The locusts settled in the bushes for the night, and their wings became wet with dew. Then all Umuofia turned out in spite of the cold harmattan, and everyone filled his bags and pots with locusts. The next morning they were roasted in clay pots and then spread in the sun until they became dry and brittle, and for many days this rare food was eaten with solid palm oil. Okonkwo sat in his obi, crunching happily with Ikemefuna and Woye, and drinking palm wine copiously, when Obuefi Ezeudu came in. Page 57. Ezeudu was the oldest man in this quarter of Umuofia. He had been a great and fearless warrior in his time, and was now accorded great respect in all the clan. He refused to join in the meal, and asked Okonkwo to have a word with him outside. And so they walked out together, the old man supporting himself with his stick. When they were out of earshot, he said to Okonkwo, "That boy calls you father. Do not bear a hand in his death." Okonkwo was surprised, and was about to say something, when the old man continued, "Yes, Umuofia has decided to kill him. The oracle of the hills and the caves has pronounced it. They will take him outside Umuofia, as is the custom, and kill him there. But I want you to have nothing to do with it. He calls you his father." The next day, a group of elders from all the 9 villages of Umuofia came to Okonkwo's house early in the morning, and before they began to speak in low tones, Woye and Ikemefuna were sent out. They did not stay very long, but when they went away, Okonkwo sat still for a very long time, supporting his chin in his palms. Later in the day, he called Ikemefuna and told him that he was to be taken home the next day. Woye overheard it and burst into tears, whereupon his father beat him heavily. As for Ikemefuna, he was at a loss. His own home had gradually become very faint and distant. He still missed his mother and his sister, and would be very glad to see them. But somehow he knew he was not going to see them. He remembered once when men had talked in low tones with his father, and it seemed now as if it was happening all over again. Page 58. Later, Wuye went to his mother's hut and told her that Ikemefuna was going home. She immediately dropped her pestle with which she was grinding pepper, folded her arms across her breast, and sighed, "Poor child." The next day, the men returned with a pot of wine. They were all fully dressed, as if they were going to a big clan meeting or to pay a visit to a neighboring village. They passed their cloths under the right armpit and hung their goatskin bags and sheathed machetes over their left shoulders. Okonkwo got ready quickly, and the party set out with Ikemefuna carrying the pot of wine. A deathly silence descended on Okonkwo's compound. Even the very little children seemed to know. Throughout that day, Wuye sat in his mother's hut, and tears stood in his eyes. At the beginning of their journey, the men of Umuofia talked and laughed about the locusts, about their women, and about some effeminate men who had refused to come with them. But as they drew near to the outskirts of Umuofia, silence fell upon them too. The sun rose slowly to the center of the sky, and the dry, sandy footway began to throw up the heat that lay buried in it. Some birds chirruped in the forests around. The men trod dry leaves on the sand. All else was silent. Then, from the distance, came the faint beating of the Ekwe. It rose and faded with the wind, a peaceful dance from a distant clan. "It is an Oso dance," the men said among themselves, but no one was sure where it was coming from. Some said Esi Mili, others Abame or Aninta. Page 59. They argued a short while and fell into silence again, and the elusive dance rose and fell with the wind. Somewhere, a man was taking one of the titles of his clan, with music and dancing and a great feast. The footway had now become a narrow line in the heart of the forest. The short trees and sparse undergrowth which surrounded the men's village began to give way to giant trees and climbers which perhaps had stood from the beginning of things, untouched by the axe and the bushfire. The sun, breaking through their leaves and branches, threw a pattern of light and shade on the sandy footway. Ikemefuna heard a whisper close behind him and turned round sharply. The man who had whispered now called out aloud, urging the others to hurry up. "We still have a long way to go," he said. Then he and another man went before Ikemefuna and set a faster pace. Thus the men of Umuofia pursued their way, armed with sheathed machetes, and Ikemefuna, carrying a pot of palm wine on his head, walked in their midst. Although he had felt uneasy at first, he was not afraid now. Okonkwo walked behind him. He could hardly imagine that Okonkwo was not his real father. He had never been fond of his real father, and at the end of 3 years he had become very distant indeed. But his mother and his 3-year-old sister? Of course she would not be 3 now, but 6. Would he recognize her now? She must have grown quite big. How his mother would weep for joy and thank Okonkwo for having looked after him so well and for bringing him back. She would want to hear everything that had happened to him in all these years. Could he remember them all? Page 60. He would tell her about Wuye and his mother and about the locusts. Then, quite suddenly, a thought came upon him. His mother might be dead. He tried in vain to force the thought out of his mind. Then he tried to settle the matter the way he used to settle such matters when he was a little boy. He still remembered the song. Eze Elina Elina Sala Eze Ililkwaya Ikwaba Akwa Oligoli Ebe Danda Nekieze Ebe Uzuzu Netegu Sala. He sang it in his mind and walked to its beat. If the song ended on his right foot, his mother was alive. If it ended on his left, she was dead. No, not dead, but ill. It ended on the right. She was alive and well. He sang the song again, and it ended on the left, but the second time did not count. The first voice gets to Chukwu, or God's house. That was a favorite saying of children. Ikemefuna felt like a child once more. It must be the thought of going home to his mother. One of the men behind him cleared his throat. Ikemefuna looked back, and the man growled at him to go on and not stand looking back. The way he said it sent cold fear down Ikemefuna's back. His hands trembled vaguely on the black pot he carried. Why had Okonkwo withdrawn to the rear? Page 61. Ikemefuna felt his legs melting under him, and he was afraid to look back. As the man who had cleared his throat drew up and raised his machete, Okonkwo looked away. He heard the blow. The pot fell and broke in the sand. He heard Ikemefuna cry, "My father, they have killed me," as he ran towards him. Dazed with fear, Okonkwo drew his machete and cut him down. He was afraid of being thought weak. As soon as his father walked in that night, Woye knew that Ikemefuna had been killed, and something seemed to give way inside him, like the snapping of a tightened bow. He did not cry. He just hung limp. He had had the same kind of feeling not long ago, during the last harvest season. Every child loved the harvest season. Those who were big enough to carry even a few yams in a tiny basket went with grown-ups to the farm. And if they could not help in digging up the yams, they could gather firewood together for roasting the ones that would be eaten there on the farm. This roasted yam, soaked in red palm oil and eaten in an open farm, was sweeter than any meal at home. It was after such a day at the farm, during the last harvest, that Woye had felt for the first time a snapping inside him, like the one he now felt. They were returning home with baskets of yams from a distant farm across the stream when they heard the voice of an infant crying in the thick forest. A sudden hush had fallen on the women who had been talking, and they had quickened their steps. Woye had heard that twins were put in earthenware pots and thrown away in the forest, but he had never yet come across them. Page 62. A vague chill had descended on him, and his head had seemed to swell, like a solitary walker at night who passes an evil spirit on the way. Then something had given way inside him. It descended on him again, this feeling, when his father walked in, that night, after killing Ikemefuna.